Dow never called us back. So we decided to go to the company's General Assembly in Midland, in the U.S., to ask our questions. A few days later, we finally received an email from Dow. The company laments, "Bhopal was a terrible tragedy that we will never forget." But they relieved themselves of all responsibility, stating that, "We acquired Union Carbide more than 16 years after the catastrophe of 1984.
Dow continues to address global issues through human solutions. Issues like clean water, as important as life itself. Dow is working to make water safe and readily available to people all over the globe. The human element. Nothing is more fundamental. Nothing more elemental."
In Dow's wake, countless victims and human tragedies pile up without any damage to the company's profits. In December 2015, Dow announced the biggest financial operation in its history. A merger of $130 billion with another American chemical giant, DuPont. A match made in heaven.
You and DuPont, there's a lot of good chemistry between us.
DuPont made its fortune with dynamite.
Dynamite!
Nylon. And Teflon. The magical material that prevents food from sticking to pans. However, behind the success of Teflon, DuPont hides a dark secret.
I just can't believe that DuPont, the money means more than people.
There's people dying because of what they've done.
DuPont knew years ago what they were doing.
At best, it's despicable. At the worst, it's criminal.
At the heart of this drama is one city, Parkersburg. Lost in the eastern U.S. The city was built around the DuPont factory. Suzanne Bailey came here in 1978 to work on the Teflon production lines.
I went to work in May the 8th, 1978. That was my glorious day, right there. They took our pictures.
It's you?
That's me, without gray hair.
In the middle?
Yep. Just, you know, I was so happy.
You're smiling.
I was. That was the elite job. I mean, everybody wanted to go there because for the money, for the benefits, and everything like that. It was secure.
The chemical industry is a growing one, growing by leaps and bounds.
I mean, you could just mention the DuPont name and doors swung open. It was like princes coming through the door, you know?
Yes, in such an environment, you can look to a bright future with confidence and optimism.
Were you happy, so?
I was thrilled. I was absolutely thrilled to death.
A few months after starting her job at DuPont, Suzanne Bailey became pregnant. In January of 1981, she gives birth to little Bucky.
When he was born, it was very traumatic. They didn't know what to do with him. They'd never seen anything like it. I could not figure out what happened. He had half a nostril, half a nose, the eye as a keyhole pupil. I didn't know what to do. I was afraid he was going to die in my arms. I had no idea what was wrong.
Bucky survived. He is now 35 years old. But his childhood was spent between his home and the hospital.
I had 30 surgeries in a span of, you know, 6 to 7 years, where they took rib cartilage to form my nose. I have a metal plate here. They stretched my forehead out so that they could use that skin and bring it down and mold my nose here. I still only have one nostril, functioning nostril.
We had to put the hockey mask on him and the guards because he wasn't allowed to touch his face.
For how long?
He had to wear those for, I would say, 3 months, 4 months.
It's a long time.
Yeah, the only way that he got to take him off was just to eat.
How is it as a kid to grow up and to have, you know, so many surgeries? And I mean, it's pretty intense, you know.
Walking out in public and going into a store or a restaurant, and as soon as you enter, all the eyes are on you. And school, when you go in and you're trying to make new friends, all they see is you're different.
After her maternity leave, Suzanne Bailey began to suspect her job as the cause of Bucky's deformities. A mysterious source tips her off to one molecule in particular, C8, the molecule in Teflon that stops food from sticking to pans.
When I went back to work the first day, I went to the locker and I found the paper laying there. I picked it up and I began reading about it. It was talking about how the rats were fed the C8 and what deformities that it had around their face. And I thought, that sounds just like Bucky.
It was very similar to what Bucky had.
Absolutely. Very similar, almost identical to what he had. That's why I knew that there was something wrong. That's why I connect.
The scientific study Suzanne Bailey found had been conducted by a subcontractor of DuPont. It studied baby rats whose mothers were exposed to C8. They developed abnormal eye lenses.
I immediately walked out that door, went down to medical, and I said, is this what's wrong with my baby? Oh, no, no, no. Nothing on this planet will hurt you. That was the motto. That's what they always say.
Yeah.
Nothing here will hurt you.
But in the meantime, DuPont was secretly investigating the pregnant women working in their factory. 2 out of 7 children born to the factory workers had facial deformities like Bucky. Shortly after, DuPont decided to transfer Suzanne Bailey and her colleagues to other departments. At the time, Kenton Wamsley also worked in the manufacturing department of Teflon. He remembers the discussion he had with his manager.
He said, Ken, we sent all the women home out of Teflon, all of them. He said, oh, don't worry. It won't hurt the men, just the women. We feel that it can cause trouble. So I thought, won't hurt me.
Kenton Wamsley was a lab technician. He handled C8 for 30 years.
Breathed the fumes from them, all the samples we breathed. But we just, you know, at the time, we thought DuPont would take care of us. And so I just did my jobs for years and years, you know. And we didn't realize that our health was an issue then. Surgeon diagnosed me as having cancer. They had to take all my rectum, part of my colon.
They're giving you that, yeah, for every 5 years.
So, now Kenton Wamsley has to live with an ostomy bag attached to his stomach. He changes it day and night. At the factory, he worked in a team with 3 other technicians.
My buddies, people I really love, seen them every day, cared about them. Those guys are all dead, and I should have been. They didn't even see retirement. None of them.
Wamsley and his colleagues were never warned about the risks of C8. However, we procured a confidential document from DuPont. It's dated 1982, 34 years ago. In it, Mr. Rector at the time expresses concern about the consequences of C8 retained in the blood of employees. He specifically recommends that practical steps be taken to reduce this exposure.
All employees, not just Teflon area workers, are exposed. So rather than to do anything, they just wrote it out. I've never seen a letter like that. I'm mad. You can see why. We could have prevented a lot of lives if they would have told us there's a problem. Why'd they cover it up? Why'd they lie? Why didn't they have us protected? Too costly?
We track down Bruce Carr, DuPont's former medical director. He is now enjoying a peaceful retirement by the ocean, far from Parkersburg.
I have a document of 1982 showing that you were aware that CH was toxic for workers. Why have you not told them the truth at that time?
They were all told the truth. They were told everything we knew at the time.
Actually, no. I have interviewed some employees and they were not aware of anything.
We told employees everything we knew as soon as we knew it. You go back to 1982, you're trying to do reconstruction history, and you can't do that.
Why have you not protected your employees? Il a raccroché.
DuPont would not only put their employees in danger. Once again, tens of thousands of people would be affected. They live up to 70 kilometers away from the factory. One man would discover this, a bit by accident. Joe Kiger. On October 31st, 2000, he receives a letter from the municipality concerning the quality of the tap water. It mentions C8.
I was sitting in my courtyard, and the wife was watering the flowers, and we got our water bill in the mail, and with that bill came a letter. It's like you get form letters all the time. So you look and say, oh, okay, bang, and you put it over, and you don't think about it. Next thing you know, you throw it away. And that's basically what this was. It just caught my attention, and I started reading through it, and then the flags started popping up. First of all, what was C8 here, mm-hmm. which is used by DuPont Works? Well, what's DuPont have to do with our water?
Joe Kiger sought clarification on the matter.
I called DuPont to try to find out. So they put me in touch with a guy, a gentleman named Mr. Kennedy, and I said, you know, I'd like to know more about this C8 issue. He just told me it's nothing to worry about. It was just a byproduct of Teflon, and it wasn't anything to worry about. I mean, he was flat out lying to me, I could tell that.
To get to the bottom of it, he takes DuPont to court. After a long legal battle, the judge forces the company to declassify their internal studies on C8. Joe Kiger discovers the truth behind the factory at Parkersburg. For decades, they've been dumping C8 waste into the river. To make things worse, DuPont has known since 1984 that the molecule spread into the region's tap water. The company found astronomical levels in public taps, up to 50 times the limit of toxicity, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
That was 1984, and we didn't come out till 2000.
So, 16 years.
Yeah, before we even hit them up about it. And they chose, as you see right here, they chose not to do anything about it. And they knew what was coming with the liabilities if they got caught. They were trying to slide under the radar. People trusted DuPont for so long. They have done nothing but lie for years to people about what this stuff's all about. There's sick people out here because of what they've done. There's people dying because of what they've done.
During all these years, more than 70,000 people have been drinking contaminated water. In 2011, both scientific research and the U.S. justice system established that C8 could cause six diseases: thyroid disorder, high cholesterol, ulcerative colitis, high blood pressure, kidney cancer, or testicular cancer. Today, 3,500 people in the Parkersburg region are ill. They've all filed complaints against DuPont. This is the case for Earl and Gwen Botkin.
I've had ulcerative colitis for about 17 years, and it's about killed me a couple times. I still have thyroid problem, and I have high cholesterol. And those are all associated with C8.
Today, Earl Botkin doesn't have a colon anymore. He, too, is living with an ostomy bag.
So all of a sudden, you don't function normally, but you have your bowel movement on your side. And that's what I'll live with until I die. And there's not any hope of that's going to change. It controls where I go, what I do, and what I eat. It just controls a lot of things in my life. But anyway, I lived through that.
A document reveals that all of these victims could have been spared. On May 22, 1984, a meeting took place at the DuPont headquarters. The directors are worried about the consequences for the inhabitants. They plan to eliminate all C8 emissions.
I wanted to show you these sentences here.
But finally, no measures are taken. Their argument, it's not economically attractive.
That was in what year?
84. That's when we were married. That's a long time ago. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Long, long time ago.
That's crazy. That's what makes it so bad, you know, that they had evidence all along and just disregarded it and kept doing what they were doing.
It was company greed that caused this whole situation. They knew what they were doing to us, and they continued to do it for money. That's the only reason they continued to do it.
DuPont refuses to collectively compensate the 3,500 sick people. They prefer to study the cases one by one. As a result, since 2012, only one victim has been able to get a trial. DuPont was sentenced to pay her $1.6 million. The 3,499 remaining victims, like Earl Botkin, are still waiting. At the current pace of the trials, the last one would take place in 100 years.
Do you still trust and you are still confident that you will get a trial at some point?
Oh.
It lives long enough.
It's probably going to be 150, I'm right. It's kinda, there will be a trial someday. But the chances of me living long enough to ever see that are probably slim to none. But we're just another document, another number of cases to be tried. DuPont has made billions of dollars. I think they should stand up to what they've done and make it right with the people they've made sick.
DuPont refused all of our requests for an interview, so we drove to their headquarters in Delaware on the East Coast to convince them to answer our questions. At the other end of the line, we reach the head of media relations, Daniel Turner.
We are doing a documentary piece. The best way is, you know, we meet and to make a proper interview, you know, at some point. But first, let's meet. You know, I'm just here.
We'll respectfully decline the on-camera interview. I will provide you with a statement.
You know, there is like an incredible amount of documents showing that you have known at DuPont for the past 30 years that C8 was toxic. And you know that you were poisoning your employees at the Washington Works plant and the Parkersburg citizen. Why are you not recognizing the fact that you have deliberately poisoned thousands of persons?
Okay, so are those the questions you're asking?
Yeah, this is my questions.
Okay, I'll be happy to provide with our statement.
Today, we are in 2016. There are still 3,500 persons with severe disease that are waiting to just have the right to get a trial. I mean, for how long are you going to deny your responsibility? Are you waiting that they all die?
So, we will provide you with a statement for your piece.
Nothing else? No?
Like I said, we will provide you with a statement. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Bye.
Bye.
We did receive a press release from DuPont, but without a single word for the victims. They claim to have studied C8 carefully for decades and affirm to have always acted responsibly. In 2015, DuPont finally stopped using C8. The company was also ordered by the courts to clean up the region. But how many generations are still to experience the after effects of this contamination? In the chemical world, history inexorably tends to repeat itself. It takes decades to reveal the truth, and just as many years for the multinationals to be prosecuted. In their laboratories, new toxic molecules are constantly being developed. But in 10, 20, 30, or 40 years, who knows how many new victims will be poisoned?
Merged together, Dow Chemical and DuPont create the world's largest chemical company in terms of sales. Yet, the victims' testimonies, those whose lives have been poisoned, will forever cast a shadow over this industry as they fight in the hope that someday their culprits will be brought to justice. And that's it for this week, everyone. It's goodbye.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome once again to another program of Questions and Answers on the Islamic Belief. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and I'm here with Sayyid Muhsin Naqawi. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having me.
We were talking about freedom of speech, and we try to find the main problem and the central problem of this issue between the Muslim nation and the Western Hemisphere with its liberal democracy and the ideology of modernism. And we reached the conclusion that there is something called holy. And in the eyes of today's very secular, atheistic, materialistic people of the West, not talking about those devout Christians, because they also have holiness within their religion, but I'm talking about those who do not commit to any religion, they do not have anything called holy. But in real fact, as Sayyid, you mentioned in the previous program, they also have something called holy, but they don't mention the name or the word holy. And they have their own red lines that you should not pass or stamp on, otherwise there will be retaliations. But talking about how to fix the issue, how can we fix it? Now, we have different views, you and I, we have different views. How can we fix it? Where can we meet? Where is the meeting point between us and our view and the Christians of the West and the Jews of the West, together with secular, materialistic, humanistic people?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, obviously, when we talk about the unity, unity always happens where there is a dispute, because when there is no dispute, there's no point to get united on.
Right.
There are some aspects in which I differ from you, you differ from me, there's
right.
differences, but there are some commonalities, the common things. The unity is always on the common things. Number one, when you have some red lines in your viewpoint,
right,
and you do not allow others to talk about those red lines, then when you're talking about someone, if they have similar red lines, you need to obviously consider those red lines as well.
Right.
Muslim community is not a small number in the world. We have a big number of
1.5 billion.
We have a big number of Muslims living in the world. And when you insult Muslims, you're basically insulting the whole 1.5 billion, the way you said, or the whole Muslim community who's living in the world, whether they're living in America or England or Europe or Asia, Canada, Australia, no matter where they live. So you're insulting this big number. And when you insult all of them, there is a retaliation. You might see that retaliation maybe in Europe. You might see that in France. You might see that, for example, any part of the world. So there is a retaliation. So you need to be careful about this, number one. Now, when we talk about the red lines, obviously there must be some red lines. For example, for the Muslims, the Book of Allah and the prophets of Allah are the red lines. We respect Jesus, alayhi salam, being a prophet. We respect Moses, alayhi salam. He was the prophet. So we believe on all these prophets. So you should not insult a prophet at all.
Right.
Because he is someone who's been sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we have clear evidences in the Quran. Book of Allah. We believe in the Torah, in Injil, so-called Bible that they have. Obviously, this is not the actual Injil that was at that time. There's many changes in that. But there are four books, including Quran. These are some red lines, obviously. Yes, in today's world, there are some people who tries to insult, for example, the supreme leader of Iran, for example. Yes, they do that because he is the leader. You have difference of opinion.
They're not allowed to do that.
They do that. And
they
he himself
shouldn't be allowed.
He himself can defend himself. He himself can defend himself. He himself can answer them.
Right.
Okay, for example, we had like...
But I think that there should be repercussions and retaliation for insulting.
Yes, there was,
But not if it's a constructive criticism.
But he himself came and he gave a speech. He said, they're doing with me, so I will deal with them. Don't worry about this. Don't waste your time or energy into these things. These things are there to stop you from what you're doing. So this was his answer. So you see the difference, the way, like we said in one of the programs, that if the prophet was there by himself, he can defend himself. He can show you the way where to go. But because he's not there, then obviously everyone have its own reaction on a specific issue.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
So first thing is to get united, obviously. First thing we need to remember, when we're talking about the freedom of speech, the way West have their red lines, everyone has their own red lines. So you need to believe on this. This cannot be done, like the unity cannot be made, or we cannot get together if you, when it comes to you, you have your red lines, you do not allow others to talk about them. But when it comes on the others, for example, Muslims or any other nation, you are free to talk about anything in regards to them. This cannot be happened. There must be a principle, and we need to follow that principle. The main problem in today's world is that we are not following the principles when it goes to others. When it's about me, yes, I apply all the principles. I'm following all the rules. But whenever it's about others...
So there is a hypocrisy.
Yes, it is
definitely. But where is the meeting point? Where can we meet?
Obviously, there are interfaith conferences that are happening.
Right.
And these interfaith conferences should be
made. But what if the person is not a religious person? He's a materialist.
That's the point. We need to make these interfaith conferences public. These are in the conferences amongst the scholars. Yes, the people should also know about this. Because people are not aware of these things, that's why whatever is being injected to them, they're believing on that. A person who is material, who is materialistic, he does not believe on anything, for example, an atheist, obviously, he should come on the grounds of ethics. We can unite with him in the basis. Obviously, he also believes. He has beliefs as well. We cannot say like he does not have a religion. He has a religion that there is no God. He right. believes on these things. He has his own beliefs. He's following himself. That's what we can say about him. But obviously, there are some ethical grounds. We need to follow ethics. You know, insulting, abusing are not the way
no.
to talk, to deal with the right. people. They are the ethics, common ethics.
Right.
How this person, when he's living in a community, he's living with the Muslim, non-Muslim, for example, Christian, Jews, Hindu, Sikhs, who are living in his right. neighbor. He's a very peaceful person. But when he comes to talk about something, he becomes, for example, an aggressive.
Let me give you another example, say it about Facebook and Twitter
mm-hmm.
and Instagram maybe. Why are they taking down the posters and the comments about Shahid Soleimani? You know, the general who was assassinated by a drone by the terrorist regime of U.S.
Yes. Obviously, we know that the Facebook and tweet are...
Where is the freedom of speech here?
Well, obviously, these are the social, we can say, media servers that are operated by these terrorist regime, obviously.
Right.
And when they're running their own servers, you cannot put a data which is against them. For example, Qasem Soleimani, who has saved humanity, who gave his life to save
sacrificed
humanity,
everything.
Sacrificed himself for this cause. Obviously, in the eyes of the
main actor to diminishing
ISIS.
Daesh, oh,
ISIS.
ISIS. Yeah.
The so-called terrorist regime like U.S., they said, like, we are diminishing
ISIS. Not so-called.
ISIS.
They are.
The so-called superpower, yes.
All right.
They are, yes. And obviously, they were the ones who used to claim that they are eliminating the ISIS, but actually it was Qasem Soleimani who
right.
eliminated Al-Qaeda and, for example, the ISIS from the Syria
the
and
region,
Iraq,
yeah.
the region. Obviously, and this kind of people, obviously, they are their enemies because they have, we can say, disclosed or they have made apparent what they were hiding.
Right.
And obviously, their hypocrisy has come in front of the public. General public, they know that it's actually Qasem Soleimani.
So there is a hypocrisy basically behind this.
That's number one. Number two is obviously this media is in the hands
because
of
a terrorist like the president of the American regime.
Yeah,
they're allowed to be on Twitter. They're allowed to tweet how much they want. They're allowed to have Facebook and Instagram, but a person like Shahid Soleimani is not,
and it shows clearly that this media is in their hands. And they're using this for, obviously, they're using all the data that is over there. You know, when they can delete a picture,
it's very
a
interesting.
Statement,
right.
or anything that you mentioned about Qasem Soleimani, if they can delete that, it means that they are saving all the data that is on the Facebook, on the Twitter, by those people who have their accounts, and there's no privacy. It's all in the hands
right.
of CIA, maybe FBI, maybe
right.
other intelligence agencies. Maybe in the hands of Israel as well.
For sure.
So
sure.
all these things, like for our listeners, that if you think that you're on the Facebook or Twitter or maybe WhatsApp or I don't know, other means,
other
they
social
all
media
are
well.
Sharing your data. I know it's end-to-end encrypted, they say. It is end-to-end encrypted.
Right.
But it is for our general public, for people who are like on the low level of IT or working. But for these intelligence companies, for example, the one who has created
this
software.
There is no encryption there.
Who has created
everything.
This software, yes,
yeah.
there is no encryption for him. Because he knows how to decrypt all these things.
Right.
So basically, these are the tools that they have injected into the society and they want people to get more into use. You know, there was a joke, I've seen a message like about the Google as well. The person in the future, he wanted to order a pizza. Google asked him, you can order this pizza. He said, how you know I like this? He said, because in the couple of times before you have ordered this, I have all your data. Mm. And then he said, it's better to order this one.
Right.
He said, why? Because you have cholesterol, for example. Right. And all. So everything's in the hands of Google in today's world. So we need to be very much careful. And this is very much clear that if Twitter or if the Facebook or if other channels or medias, if they are deleting the caption or the pictures or the things about Qasem Soleimani, Sheikh Qasem Soleimani, or other people like him, it means that these are the means of the enemies through which they are collecting data for themselves.
Right. Thank you very much, Sayyid. Jazakallah khairan. And thank you, dear listeners, for joining us in this program of questions and answers on Islamic belief.
إن في الجنة نهراً لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهراً لبن إن في الجنة نهراً لبن لعلي حسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
This is for a better life.
فرمود بعثتو لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, we send our peace and blessings upon all the prophets of Allah, subhanahu wa ta'ala, and especially the last of them, Muhammad al-Mustafa and his progeny, and those companions who follow their path. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, and welcome to another program of For a Better Life here on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about psychological, inner diseases, mental diseases within ourselves, within our society, in our surroundings, people that we know. But first of all, dear brothers and sisters, we need to fix ourselves, manage ourselves. If we are not happy, if we are feeling anxiety and stress and have other psychological diseases, then others will feel that from us too. And we will not be able to help others either. We have to first of all help ourselves. A person who is drowning cannot help others. So you have to help and aid yourself before you can help and aid others. And we were talking about these mental illnesses and the way of thinking. And we also mentioned the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi and how he would interpret everything positively when others would interpret the same thing negatively. And these events that happen and occur in our daily life, which we interpret negatively, and they are negative incidents that torment us, incidents that make ourselves, our emotions, our moods to be negative, might not be significant. Most of those things are actually insignificant. These daily events are not exceptional and happen for everyone. We cannot alter the eternal laws of nature and make things happen according to our wishes. Someone in the society might be rude to us. The customer was rude to me. My colleague was rude to me. Someone broke the line in front of me. Someone honked the car, and so on and so forth. Someone scared me in the traffic. And there are many, many other examples. These are the things that we can face from our outer reality. But what about our inner reality? The dangers that threaten man from within, they are no less significant than the external ones that we have mentioned in the previous programs, and sometimes are of a more serious character. There is a destructive force in every individual that threatens his life. This danger that accumulates within man's being is the same as anxiety and anguish, and the person who carries it within him or her may be unconscious of its presence. Should the physical and mental energies that are consumed by fear and anxiety concerning imaginary dangers be spent in fruitful tasks that can yield valuable and brilliant results?
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes, and we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor 'cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
So instead of thinking about those insignificant things that might occur in our daily life, all of that energy that is consumed by an imaginary fear that we have in our mind, if we would have consumed all of that energy to do fruitful tasks, mankind, not only you yourself, but mankind would be much more successful. Thus, we need to think, ponder, and sometimes ponder less about those insignificant issues that are consuming our energy, and concentrate instead on fruitful tasks and reach brilliant results. Everyone can recall the amount of precious time that he or she has spent about the ways of encountering possible accidents. I'm saying possible. Exceptions aside, one may say that the actual hardships and misfortunes that most people face are quite insignificant in comparison to the imaginary calamities that torment us. So we have these imaginary torments or imaginary calamities in our mind, and we think that these calamities are huge dangers. We think that these are calamities, but in fact, they are insignificant issues. And thus, we need to concentrate and not fall into that ditch which consumes all of that precious energy that we have. A writer by the name of Cronin writes, "Make a list of the things that you consider the causes of your worries and anxieties. Write it on a piece of paper. Do it today, dear brothers and sisters. Write your concerns, those things that make you worry or give you anxiety, on a piece of paper. When these causes are down on the paper, you will see that, in general, most of them are vague, insignificant, unimportant. Most of the time, the balance sheet of our worries and cares appears as follows." He says, 40% of them are such calamities as will never take place at all. 30% of them relate to the past or the future sorrows, which not even the sympathies of the whole world can alter. You cannot alter what is in the past or will come in the future. And 12% of them consist of unfounded fear of loss of health. And on 8% may really be causes for worry and anxiety. Thus, dear brothers and sisters, think about it. Write your problems on a sheet of paper and look at it, and you will see that in fact, these are insignificant issues. And if they are major issues, then we have to do something about it. But most of our time is consumed because of those insignificant, small, minor issues. Till next time, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of you.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. It's all I need. All I need. All I need, all I need, oh, oh, oh,
oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh, oh,
love is all I need.
Myanmar has been the scene of mass demonstrations against junta leaders ever since the February 1 coup. Anti-coup protesters have defied a crackdown by the military, taking to the streets in several cities across the country almost daily. Demonstrators are demanding the release of the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was detained along with a number of parliament members. They're also demanding the restoration of civilian rule. Myanmar's junta has ratcheted up security measures to quell anti-coup demonstrations, and the internet in Yangon has been down for several days. Junta leaders deny they staged a coup and justified their power seizure by alleging widespread voter fraud in November elections that Suu Kyi's party won. They also pledged to hold new elections soon. This, however, has failed to calm down the situation.
I guess a lot of times with the Burma army and the Burmese dictators, they are always above the law. So why he doesn't calm the situation is because he doesn't want to calm the situation, because he wants things to be under his control, and He wanted to hold on to the power the way he wants to run the country. And that is why, although you will see a lot of chaotic going on, and you would think that if he is sincere about, if he's talking about the election issues and election is fraud, if that is the case, then why violence?
The army generals have filed multiple charges against the deposed leader, including ignoring an import and export law over walkie-talkies that were found in her home during the search. The Nobel laureate's lawyer says she has also been hit with a second charge, which is violating the country's disaster management law. Observers believe the accusations against Suu Kyi are an indication that the military is seeking a permanent grip on power.
Nobody knows how long the military is going to hold on to the power, but it is very worrisome that they probably may not want to let go the power because for so many reasons, especially those who are in power, like high-ranking position, like Mei Yongle. He has so much political ambition in order to become the president, and even more so in order to control and have control over his own economic ambitions.
The military seizure of power has drawn global reactions. The United Nations has warned the army of several consequences of any harsh response to protesters. The UN Special Rapporteur said Myanmar's generals will be held accountable for any suppression of the civil disobedience campaign there. The coup also drew reactions from other international players. China said the situation in Myanmar is not what Beijing wants to see. It also rejected social media rumors that China was involved in the coup as complete nonsense. However, China, along with Russia, says the coup is Myanmar's internal affair. The United States, however, has taken a different stance. Last Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden announced new sanctions on those responsible for the coup and any entities linked to junta leaders. Biden said Washington will be ready to impose additional measures. There is also the risk of a new confrontation between U.S. and China, maybe over Myanmar.
I mean, look, yes, the U.S. is talking about threatening to impose sanctions, targeted sanctions especially. And what did they do in the past week? They did impose some targeted sanctions, but it's just on, what, on the gems companies. But the most important thing to follow, to go behind, is the oil and gas company that is owned by the military. That is where they make a whole bunch of money in order to buy their submarines, their warplanes, all kinds of sophisticated weapons, which we call Mag and Mel, the oil company. They didn't do anything about it. That is something we wanted to see the U.S. will sanction.
The two nuclear-armed countries are already facing off on a range of other issues, including the U.S. interference in China's periphery, such as the South China Sea and the Korean Peninsula, as well as the trade and cyber wars between them. Myanmar is just another geopolitical war threat for China and the U.S., but observers believe Beijing has an edge over Washington in this struggle.
Saudi Arabia could not have it any better. As soon as the former U.S. President Donald Trump came into office, it was evident that he intended to solidify the relationship with Saudi Arabia even more than before. And the businessman that Trump was, that translated into weapon sales to Saudi Arabia.
$533 million.
The Saudis were more than happy to comply. Through their weapons purchases, they also bought the loyalty of the U.S. presidents when it came to their wrongdoings, like their human rights violations, and of course, the Saudi war in Yemen, and the grave violations that were taking place there. The U.S. president even shielded the Crown Prince from the brutal murder assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, which the world condemned as a heinous crime. That included the current U.S. President Joe Biden, an act which may have been the straw that broke the camel's back when it came to Saudi Arabia and the Crown Prince. This may explain why Joe Biden has announced that King Salman is whom he would communicate with in Saudi Arabia, and not bin Salman, even though bin Salman is in fact the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia.
And on Saudi Arabia, I would say, you know, we've made clear from the beginning that we're going to recalibrate our relationship with Saudi Arabia, and that, you know, President Biden, on one of the questions there was also, just to go back to the context of it, whether he would be speaking with MBS. And part of that is going back to engagement counterpart to counterpart. The president's counterpart is King Salman. And I expect at an appropriate time, he would have a conversation with him. I don't have a prediction of the timeline on that.
I think that the significance of this snub of Biden's statement is the suggestion that by the White House or Biden will not consider Saudi Arabia as synonymous with Mohammed bin Salman, but rather seek to establish a relationship with Saudi Arabia that does not uniquely or exclusively depend on Mohammed bin Salman. And of course, that can carry many meanings. At the moment, it just seems to be dating but significant in expressing the intentions of the Biden administration to rein in Mohammed bin Salman.
The Saudi Crown Prince, however, was forewarned of Biden's stance towards him. Biden used pretty tough language specifically against Mohammed bin Salman during his campaign trail, calling him a pariah. Tough language that the Saudis were not used to hearing. Even though the U.S. President Joe Biden claims that human rights is a barometer when it comes to Saudi Arabia, then why would it sell weapons to other countries, like in the case of Egypt, in which President Sisi is known for rights abuses in that country?
Declaration.
The U.S. President has plans for West Asia, or the Middle East region, that goes beyond Saudi Arabia and Israel. The region's security is still very much a concern for the U.S., but regional dynamics and equations may be changing. First off, ending the U.S. support for Saudi Arabia's war on Yemen.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
If the U.S. wants to establish regional security, it will need the Islamic Republic of Iran. The U.S. realizes the military power that Iran possesses, and without this power, the region will be in flux due to tensions between Iran and Saudi Arabia and Israel, and with the resistance groups in the region. In order for this to be solved, the U.S. realizes that it has no choice other than to rejoin the JCPOA. This can decrease tensions significantly, even though both Saudi Arabia and Israel are not enthusiastic about this, nor do they support it. Iran is also looking for regional stability, but without U.S. presence in the region. This comes in the form of Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's vision for peace called the Hormuz Peace Initiative, or the Hormuz Peace Plan, in order to establish security in the region, including the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, and the Sea of Oman. This will involve regional countries.
The message coming from Biden is that while we are not lifting sanctions, we are offering concessions in other places, in other issues. And I think for Iran in particular, it's a matter of to what extent can we trust the U.S. to lift the sanctions if we do eventually come to a deal.
But why would the U.S. be after this approach to West Asia? The Pentagon, at Biden's direction, has undertaken a review of changes that need to be made to U.S. military deployments worldwide, with an eye towards countering the growing threat from China. West Asia is no longer a number one priority for the U.S. It remains to be seen, however, if the U.S. lifts Iran's sanctions in order for this plan to bear fruit and for Iran to return to the JCPOA. The U.S. President Joe Biden's approach towards Saudi Arabia changing, however, is just a mirage, since Saudi Arabia has continued bombing Yemen and throughout all the previous U.S. administrations, and despite U.S. promises made, U.S. support has not changed, neither for Saudi Arabia nor for Israel.
The Israeli military has once again carried out a number of missile attacks from the occupied Syrian Golan Heights, targeting several army positions near the capital, Damascus. The Syrian media have confirmed the attacks, saying Israeli jets flew over the Golan Heights to hit targets on the edge of Damascus. They also said the country's air defense intercepted and shut down most of the missiles fired toward Damascus. But this is not the first time the regime attacks Syria. Israel has done hundreds of air and missile strikes on government troops and their allies there. Some believe the attacks are aimed at undermining the country's military capabilities.
This has been the focus for the last few years. Israel's focus especially has been towards Syria.